CJLO 1690 AM. This is the Onomatopoeia Show, where we talk about all graphic arts all the time. That was the Ramones off the Saturday Morning Cartoons album, doing their version of Spider-Man. And I love it because it sounds so different from the original. And it leads us right nicely into today's topic, which is the second part of the Marvel alternative, is what I'm calling it. Because there was this, like, era of Marvel at the beginning of the aughts where suddenly all these, like, underground alternative comic book creators started working for Marvel Comics. It was really bizarre, but kind of exciting at the same time. So we're going to talk about that. But the thing is it's really fascinating, well, especially to someone like me, maybe not so much to you, but to me, I found it fascinating. It's fascinating how Marvel came to that point. Because, you know, this is like a company that's been in business since like the early 30s, and they've, you know, like any other company, they've tried to follow every trend possible. You know, in the beginning it was like teen and romance comics, and now it's like superhero stuff. So, like, it's you know, they're revamping everything so that people are just getting into it and are not so behind the times. But during the late 90s, like starting in 94 when Marvel bought Heroes World Distribution, they started kind of going down. And by 97, Diamond forged an exclusive deal with Marvel. Diamond is this distributing company. And that's because Heroes World failed. And Ronald Perlman, who was currently the owner of Marvel, was selling junk bonds in stock in Marvel and basically destroyed all of Marvel from within. And then, like, they had to file for Chapter 11 bankruptcy. And so in 97, Toy Biz and another company, Marvel Entertainment Group, they merged to end the bankruptcy. And it's all in this really great book, actually, if you're very curious to learn more. And when I say great book, I mean it. It was really fascinating to read. It was a lot of Wall Street battling between two huge mega corporate guys who really, I cannot believe, for example, that Ron Perlman, not the actor, but the businessman, is still in business and is still like treated kindly and as someone you can trust, because, like, really, he almost completely devastated Marvel from within. So this book is called Comic Wars, Marvel's Battle for Survival. It's by Dan Raviv, if you're curious. So the thing is this is where Marvel was at in 97, 99, and then 2000. And at that point in 2000, they decided they were going to kind of branch out and start doing something a little different. And prior to that, in 1998, actually, what they did is they asked Joe Quesada to do a series of comics called Marvel Knights. And there was, like, The Punisher by Garth Ennis, and there was, let's see, I think Moon Knight. And then there was Daredevil by Kevin Smith. But there was a bunch of them, and they were kind of, like, more adult-oriented, and they were different because, oh, there was a Black Panther. That's what I wanted to say. It wasn't Moon Knight. It was Black Panther. And they were, like, really, really harsh. Like, the beginning of Daredevil, well, I didn't really like the Kevin Smith part of it. But at the point, that you got to admit, at that time, getting someone who was a big name in movies to write a script for a comic book was a big deal. And people ate that stuff up like crazy. And Marvel came back from bankruptcy with these great comics that Joe Quesada had, you know, brought his buddies in to create with him. So there was a Kevin Smith Daredevil that Quesada co-illustrated with Jimmy Palmiotti. There was the David Mack Daredevil, which was written by David Mack and illustrated by Palmiotti, and I think Quesada did inks. And then there was like Brian Michael Bendis started doing Ultimate Spider-Man with Mark Bagley, but no, that was later. I'm getting all confused. No, Garth Ennis did Punisher with Steve Dillon. So there, that's it. I don't remember what Brian Michael Bendis was doing at that point, because he started doing Marvel Knights when Joe Quesada became editor-chief of Marvel in 2000. So it sounds a little confusing, but it's really easy to figure out. My point is this was really, I don't want to say it was revolutionary, because I don't want to give him that much credit, but at the same time, Joe Quesada came from this alternative background where he was creating his own characters for his company. His character Ash was for his own company, Azrael. He also created Azrael for the Batman series. Like, he was doing his own thing, and he was in this sort of alternative world of Valiant Comics, and, you know, he had, like, the character, Event, that's what it was. Event was the company he was doing his Ash character in, who was, like, this firefighter with superpowers. My point is he wasn't part of the big two, the Marvel or the DC universe. He was in the trenches, so to speak. And so when he got up there, he brought all these guys that, you know, admittedly Garth Ennis was doing Vertigo Comics, but at the same time, like, he's certainly not the kind of thing that Marvel would usually publish. And the Punisher that he did was pretty over the top, but it was still pretty exciting. Anyways, we're going to get into the deep stuff. Last week we did the old Marvel alternative, as we'll call it, because I think one of the reasons why I've always liked Marvel is they have a tendency to take chances on artists that you wouldn't necessarily expect DC to take chances on. Guys like Bill Sienkiewicz and Frank Miller, like, they're very exciting and different in their style. So they do neat things. Guys like David Mazzucchelli. Now we're going to talk about the people that did stuff in 2000. First, we're going to go to a music track. This track is called Stop Talking About Comics. It's by Ukulele the Mook. Oh, yeah, and the rest of it is Or I'll Kill You. And so it's kind of referring a lot of different comics, some DC, some Marvel, some cartoons. But really listen, because it's actually pretty funny. These guys are like the nerdiest of the nerds, and most of their songs have to do with superheroes. This is off their album Super Secret. You're listening to CJLO 1690 AM, Ukulele the Mook. Stop talking about comics or I'll kill you.
Stop talking about comic books or I'll kill you. I don't care if the Hulk could defeat the Man of Steel. I'm gonna rearrange your face if you continue to debate whether Logan's claws could pierce Steve Rogers' shield. I just couldn't care less if they bring back Raven. And I don't care if Spider-Man's a clone. Stop spending all our cash on back issues of The Flash, or I swear to God you're gonna spend your twilight years alone. You can call them graphic novels, still just plain old comic books to me. And I don't see why you must always ceaselessly discuss the post-hero hour continuity.
Yo, dog, I heard you like Slayer, so I put Slayer in your minivan so you can mosh while you mosh.
Get down Armageddon, Mondays 8 to 10 p.m., CJLO 1690 a.m.
And you're listening to CJLO 1690 AM. This is the Onomatopoeia Show, where we talk about all graphic arts all the time. And right now we're talking about this weird moment in time where Marvel was like rebooted and they got rid of the Comics Code Authority on their comics, which was rather shocking in the year 2001. It was a big deal. And they kind of created this sort of like movie rating system where it was like teen, mature, PG-13. And then the other thing that happened was the X-Men movie series and the Spider-Man movie series, X-Men in 2000, Spider-Man in 2002, took off. And all these people who never really read these comics are suddenly like, oh my God, we love this stuff and we want to read the comics. And so then Marvel decided to like totally revamp. And that's when they did like the Ultimate line, is to get all the people who didn't want to be bogged down with like 50 years of Spider-Man continuity to get excited about this new Spider-Man, who's like this 14-year-old boy Spider-Man. Anyways, all this stuff culminated in these crazy people doing comics that I never expected to happen. Like I interviewed Brian Michael Bendis just as he started doing Ultimate Spider-Man, and it was really surreal talking to him about it. And at the same time, he was saying stuff like, Joe Quesada wants to do things where he wants to get Milo Manara to do X-Men comics. Okay, and like 3 years ago, it happened. It took a long time, but it happened. Guys like Neil Gaiman, he wanted to get involved in Marvel comics, and it happened. 1682, I think, was what it was called. I forget. I didn't read it, so that's why I don't remember. But my point is Quesada brought in like these powerhouses. Getting Brian Michael Bendis to do Ultimate Spider-Man was amazing. I was never a huge fan of it, but a lot of people loved it. Like loved it with a capital L-O-V-E-D. And then I personally loved his Daredevils. Like from the beginning, they were just hardcore. He brought in this young artist, Alex Maleev, who I'd seen on some early Crow comics, who just like knocked it out of the park, had this hyper-realistic style, but yet it was really shady and dark. It just lended itself to this sort of gritty Hell's Kitchen style, and it was all about like the Kingpin being murdered, and you find out like all this great gumshoe cross, double cross, espionage within the mafia, like drug cartel stuff. It's really good stuff, and Bendis is so great at writing it. If you'd read any of his earlier stuff, you know, like Goldfish or Jinx or Torso, you'd know that. And then on top of that, he's getting David Mack, who did these great Kabuki comics, to do gorgeous painted Daredevil comics. He's got Garth Ennis, who did completely over the top Preacher comics, to do the Punisher, and it was like a match made in heaven. It was like the best marriage ever, because Punisher was just such an extreme character, and Ennis could just go to town because it was the Marvel Max line by that point, and only for adults. So like, Marvel was doing some crazy stuff. Now, one of the first things that they did that knocked me out of the park personally was this Generation X one issue underground special, completely illustrated by Jim Mahfood, and it's totally awesome. There's all these shout outs to like his favorite music. Like I got into Tommy Guerrero through a comic book, Jim Mahfood, thanks a lot. And it's just like taking these young teens from Generation X and then like making them really hip and cool. And that's like, to me, that was like the beginning. Then you had guys like Eric Kennett filling in for various people. Eric Kennett got to start doing Aeon Flux. He has this really long and ginky sort of style that's like really, really angular. And so here he's doing like Deathlok. And then he did like, oh, he was doing all sorts of crazy Marvel stuff. And I'm always in shock when I see his stuff. Lately, he'd been doing like a Luke Cage series. And his style is so not what you'd expect from the House of Ideas in Marvel world. Like, that's one of the things I love about them. And they're still doing it to this day. And next week, we're going to talk about all the stuff that's happening now since kind of Disney took over. Because you think there would have been a big change, but there hasn't been, thank goodness. But anyways, so you can find these comics at your local store, I think, maybe if it's a really good store. But I have to admit, like, there's, for example, I go to like 110 million comics, whatever that place is called, and they always have like a ton of cheap Marvel back issues, like super cheap. And so that's where I always pick up. Like, I've gotten some awesome Fraser Irving Iron Man. Eric Kennett did an awesome Iron Man. There's lots of good stuff in the comic book stores. So, but these kind of things take some digging, the stuff I'm talking about now. Like there was this great series called Muties that came out in 2002. And the first issue was actually done by a Marvel creator. And the sixth issue was also done by a Montreal creator is what I meant to say. I said Marvel creator, didn't I? The first one was done by Peter Ferguson, and he actually has done a whole bunch of the posters for Fantasia. He did this story about a young man and his trials and tribulations of coming into his superpowers in like a small town. And it's just so creative, the different styles he uses. Like one minute he's using this crazy sketchy sort of Robert Crummer style. The next minute he's using this sort of like ink wash that reminds me a lot of John Bolton. Another minute he's painting all these weird goofy stylized characters that make me think of like Dave Cooper. It's not what you'd ever expect from Marvel. There was the third issue was done by Dean Hashbiel, and it was about a kid getting superpowers in Africa. It's just like, you know, the third one by the Montreal cartoonist was Sal Good Sam. He did issue 6, and it was like an Irish kid getting his superpowers. And then in 2002 they started a series called NYX. And initially, this is kind of interesting. Initially, it was written by Brian Wood, and it was going to be illustrated by David Cho, who is like mega big on the graffiti scene. He's done like stuff for Vice Magazine. I actually really love his comic book work. He did work with Jordan Crane when he was doing the Non anthology. Anyways, the point is that David Cho started bad mouthing Marvel, and so Marvel fired both of them. And then they had this great storyline. So like Joe Quesada took it over, I believe. And let me just double check here because I got to open it to check. But the thing is, it was illustrated by Joshua Middleton, when Cho left. And he just has this crazy style that's super, super clean. He uses like these wacky pastels that really, really add to the mood. Let's see here. It's written by Joe Quesada. That's right. I was right. just like to be sure, because sometimes I'm wrong. But anyways, my point is NYX was going to be the story when Brian Wood envisioned it, where it was like squatter kids and raver kids, and they were getting superpowers and they didn't know how to deal with it, and the drugs they were taking were interfering and making it worse. And then Joe Quesada took it over, and illustrated by Joshua Middleton. It's still a really great comic. There's a whole bunch of them, actually. I think there's two volumes of NYX, but I recommend the first volume because Joshua Middleton, he's a pretty special artist and is really, really sporadic, and he got to start cross-gen comics. You could check out some of that stuff, Sigil. But anyways, now there's more I want to talk about, but we should go to a song. We're going to go to this track. Let's see here. Flame On. No, not that one. We'll do Ghost Rider with the Rollins Band because, you know, it's from Crow. Yeah, yeah, you remember that from The Crow? And it's Henry Rollins who's coming to town soon, so it's apropos. All right, you're listening to CJLO 1690 AM. This is the Onomatopoeia Show where we talk about all graphic arts all the time, and we're talking about Marvel Comics, so appropriately, this is the Ghost Rider song. And you're listening to CJLO 1690 AM. That was the Henry Rollins Band doing Ghost Rider from the Crow soundtrack. And what we are talking about today is how Marvel at some point during the early aughts just did a 180 and started still publishing a lot of hack work that they usually do. But there were all these amazing little gemstones hidden away that just blew me away and blew my brain out of the water and all these great things. Now, one of the greatest writers at the time who had started with Marvel at that, who had been publishing on his own through Caliber, through Oni, his own stuff, was Brian Michael Bendis. And he initially took over doing Daredevil in 2001. And his series was excellent. He had 55 issues, went on to 2006. He worked with Alex Maleev for the majority of it. And it was just really, really, really intense. Daredevil gets married. There's just all this. At one point, they think he's crazy. So it's all about trying to prove that he's not crazy. Like, there's just so many, you know, Typhoid Mary shows up. So many great things that were in the Bendis series of Daredevil. The other thing that he did that I haven't mentioned yet is he started the series Alias, and it was part of the Max line. So, I mean, there was a lot of really risque things in it, like, you know. And that's one of the things that was also great about having Joe Quesada being the editor-in-chief of Marvel coming from this alternative background, is they were very, reverential towards the Marvel characters. There was a lot of goofiness going on if you looked for it. So, for example, in Alias, there was a great, I think it was at the beginning of the second issue, or maybe it's the beginning of the first issue, I can't remember, but she's getting it from Luke Cage from behind, and all you see is her face, and it's just like not what you'd expect from Marvel. You know what I mean? And Alias was just a great series about this woman who used to be a hero, but kind of felt like she completely failed at it, and so she stopped and she decided that she was going to become like a private investigator. But every so often, like, she'll get these superhero cases and people will remember that she was this hero. And it's also like, she's also like a tough talking, trash talking girl who also drinks far too much and is just a really misanthropic sort of character. And so it also becomes this story about a bit about a redemption, you know, because in the end she ends up marrying like Luke Cage and they have like a baby and blah, blah, blah. But at the same time, it's also like this great sort of mystery series within the Marvel Universe. So, like, there's just so much great stuff that was coming out at that time. I also wanted to mention that, let's see here, there was this great Hulk annual that came out in 2001 where they did this backup by James Kolchelka, who does, like, the American Elf series, like, major mainstay in alternative comics. But the thing is this was a story that was actually in a collection called Cooper Skeeber, where all these great alternative creators did sort of, like, their version of Marvel Comics. Like, you even have a cover by Seth of, like, the X-Men class photo. It's awesome. But anyway, so in this James Kolchelka story in the back of these Hulk annual 2001, if you can find it, it's awesome because it's like Hulk's like wandering around and it's totally drawn by Kolchelka, colored by Kolchelka in this really sort of primitive childlike style, and he's getting angry because it's raining, and then so he decides that he's gonna fight the rain, and then of course he totally fails because, you know, you can't fight the rain. But anyways, I swear to God, when I was watching Hulk the new one 2008 with Edward Norton, at one point he gets really mad and tries to punch the rain, and I was just like, I wonder if James Kolchelka has seen that. So that's what was so cool about Marvel back in 2000 to 2005. Also, there was like Kev Walker was doing this amazing series for Max Comics called The Eternals. Now, Kev Walker, I know of because he would do some of the greatest, coolest Magic Gathering cards. Like, that. Like, I had a friend who was really into Magic, and I'd play it sometimes, but the art was what I really loved. You know, like, Rebecca Goy would do some gorgeous paintings, and Paolo Parente would do some neat stuff. But anyways, Kev Walker is doing this awesome series, Eternals, and it's about, like, these godlike superheroes, and it's just how, like, they almost sort of like how Magneto is, like, doesn't really believe that he should kowtow to humans because they're the superior race. These Eternals are the same kind of thing. And it's like, it's also got that sort of, you know, age-old battle that you find between like Thor and Loki, but it's between two of the leaders of the Eternals. And it's written by Chuck Austin. It's so good. So, so very good. Kev Walker. That was like six issues in the Marvel X line. There was also the Craptacular B-Sides, which was like these characters created by Evan Dorkin. But in this series, it's illustrated by Brett Weddle and Chris Cross, and written by a guy named David Marshall. But anyways, they were like these sort of like complete loser heroes that got together in New Jersey and sort of failed at what they did. And speaking of that kind of stuff, like, that's the thing. There was like all these amazing ideas coming out at Marvel where I was just like, oh, this is awesome. Oh, man, this is awesome. No, wait, this is awesome. And one of those things was Peter Milligan come out of the woodwork. He hadn't been doing stuff for so long, it seemed like. Milligan's pretty famous for doing a lot of stuff with Vertigo, but he did this series for Marvel called The Ecstatics, and this was coming out in like 2001, and it was illustrated by Mike Allred, who, I'm sorry, was completely perfect, like on a level of Frank Cho. Mike Allred and Frank Cho are like two comic book artists that I'm not really a big fan of their solo work, but were born to do superhero comics. And so Ecstatics is like these new characters that Peter Milligan created, and it's sort of like this reality, like what if superheroes were like bratty superstars, you know, like if Justin Bieber was a superhero, what would it be like? And so, like, there's these characters like Dead Girl and The Blob and Wolfman. And it's just, it's fascinating to see how they deal with the public, how they deal with the paparazzi, how they deal with their own powers. And of course, within the group, they're all jockeying for control and more fame and more perks and contracts. And then, you know, every once in a while, they might go fight a battle if they feel like it, you know. But anyway, so Ecstatics, you can find the collections anywhere. It's pretty popular. It's good stuff. Good stuff, Marvel. I don't understand why this happened. It was like sort of this bizarro world of Marvel. But anyways, I enjoyed it so much. And I'm going to share some more with you in a few minutes. But right now we're going to go to another track. I think I talked for a bit there. Should I talk more? No, we'll go to another track. You're listening to CJLO 1690 AM. This track is called Hulk is the One. And oh my God, some of the Hulk story arcs that were happening at that point in the 2000s. Well, we're going to talk about them when we come back. This track is from Spider-Man and Friends for little kids. Disney doing the big push to get the pre-toddlers into superheroes. Like, come on. Anyways, so they've got Spider-Man and Friends, and this is a song called Hulk is the One from the Hulk Spider-Man and Friends CD. You're listening to CJLO 1690 AM.
I'm gonna tell you about a friend of mine. He's kind of scary, but he's really kind. He's big and green, and he's lots of fun. And he's popular with everyone. Well, Hulk is the one, is the one, is the one. Hulk is the one when you want to have fun. Hulk is the one, is the one, is the one. Hulk is the one when you want to have fun. Now he likes to hang with his friends all day.
Hulk is the one, is the one, is the one.
And he's always got something funny to say.
Hulk is the one when you wanna have fun.
You can hear him when he laughs out loud.
Hulk is the one, is the one, is the one.
And he always stands out in a crowd.
Hulk is the one when you wanna have fun.
Well, Hulk is the one, is the one, is the one.
Hulk is the one when you wanna have fun. Hulk is the one, is the one, is the one. Hulk is the one when you wanna have fun.
CJLO 1690 AM, I bet you didn't know that Hulk was the one when you wanted to have fun. I always thought that, like, Hulk was the one when you wanted to get, like, demolition done. But no, apparently he's the one when you want to have fun. CJLO, you're listening to the Onomatopoeia Show, where we talk about all graphic arts all the time. And right now we're talking about this bubble of time in the Marvel Universe where Joe Quesada took over as editor-in-chief, and they were struggling out of bankruptcy, and they managed to score with the Ultimate Spider-Man line, the Spider-Man movies, the X-Men movies, the Fantastic Four movies. But at the same time, I don't know if it was they were full of largesse and they were willing to throw money away at these alternative creators, or if it was Joe Quesada who was in the trenches with the alternative creators before he got picked up by Marvel. And he decided to bring his friends along. Because, you know, I never in a million years ever, and I've interviewed this man would have ever expected Ed Brubaker to be writing superhero comics for Marvel, like doing Captain America. And I mean, admittedly, he's doing a fantastic job, but it just, that was really left field for me. Ed? Really? Anyways, we're going to talk about Ed in the next show because he's sort of in the later aughts, and we're talking about the early aughts. And I wanted to mention some more of the great Hulks that came out at that time. There was this great one that came out in 2001 that was called Banner, and it was written by Brian Azzarello, who was doing 100 Bullets at the time for DC, and it was illustrated by Richard Corbin, who is famous for his work in Heavy Metal magazine, and just is like this old school underground 1960s, 70s cartoonist who has this really, really thick and juicy, I don't want to say juicy, it's like rubbly style, and he was really well appropriate for Hulk. And the story, it's hard for me to tell you the story because the spoiler at the end is the best part of the book, but basically I'm not going to give it away, but I'm going to try my best to tell you a little bit about it. Basically, it's like you have to understand that Bruce Banner is a scientist, and he's constantly going around destroying things and killing people inadvertently, of course, but he feels really bad about it. And this story, Banner, by Azzarello and Corbin, is the first time where they actually, in my opinion, examine the ramifications of all the bad things that he does by accident as this giant lumbering beast, and his response to it. It's fascinating. It's so good, and you can get it in a trade quite easily. Also, I wanted to mention there was this great book that came out in 2005 that was written by Bruce Jones, who writes some of the best creepy short stories ever. Like, he's done so much stuff in like underground stuff for Clips or, you know, Caliber, or just like creepy dark stories. But he did this story called Hulk Thing Hard Knocks, which is really all it is the Hulk and the Thing just beating on each other, just wailing on each other. They're just like, well, yeah, well, I took you out that time. Yeah, you want to go? Let's go. And then they first start fighting again. And like, it's just this continual thing. Now, the thing that's so fantastic about it is that it's illustrated by Jay Lee. And Jay Lee kind of got his start in the Crow comics, but now he's just doing something so much more better. He's been doing some great covers for the Dark Tower series that Marvel's been publishing, the Stephen King books. He just, Jay Lee has these heavy inks that almost look alive. It's almost like if Venom was a painter and he just like put the alien symbiote in the work. That's almost what Jay Lee's work looks like. He is such an excellent painter, and I think he's working on a Watchmen comic, or at least the covers for the Watchmen comic right now that they're doing. So yeah, Jay Lee. Oh, we're going to talk about him later because he did a great Fantastic Four book. But anyways, Jay Lee. Such a good artist. Okay. Let's not talk about Jay Lee. I've talked about him so much because I think I talked about him on the Korean episode too, but he's so good. Like, just Google him or something. J-A-E space L-E-E. So easy. And you'll just be like, wow, Marvel's publishing this guy? Those don't look like Marvel comics. What? Huh? And you'll totally agree with me. All right. So the last Hulk comic I wanted to mention was She-Hulk. In 2005, She-Hulk was relaunched. It was written by Dan Slott, who is a very hilarious writer. And it was illustrated by Juan Bobolo, who is like this, I want to say he's Argentinian, but I could be wrong. But he definitely has that sort of like Spanish European feel to him. And his style is very cutesy, but super thin, wispy lines, very rounded bodies, nothing. He's not a hack. He's a really good artist. And he's had his comics published. He's done full painted things. Like he did this great series called The Bird. He's just, Juan Bobolo is, I was like floored when I was reading his She-Hulk comics. And that's the other thing about Marvel, because at the time I was such a stringent alternative person. And then here I am, I'm like, oh my God, I'm buying She-Hulk. What the heck? But it was like, it was so good. It was funny and it was awesome. And I recommend it if you're looking for some girly comics for girls about giant green girls who are lawyers by day. I really recommend She-Hulk. I think it's a lot of awesome girl power going on there. And then there were things like, for example, okay, they did three Elektra stories that were just mind-boggling. Okay, first they did Elektra Wolverine, The Redeemer, that came out in 2002. This was written by Greg Rucka, who was also writing the series at the time. Greg Rucka is this great crime writer. I just read this awesome Hellboy story he did, but we'll talk about that another time in like 2 weeks. I think I'll be talking about Hellboy because I've been immersing myself in the Hellboy world and I have to share. But anyways, my point is Rucka is a great writer and he did this book, The Redeemer, that was illustrated by Yoshitaka Amano. Now, Yoshitaka Amano is the guy that did Vampire Hunter D. He does all the illustration work for Final Fantasy. He is just this gorgeous Japanese painter that is like, it's like looking at Gustav Klimt, you know? It's not like, it doesn't look like a comic at all. He's done stuff with Neil Gaiman. He did the Dream Hunter series. So he did this story that was like about Elektra bodyguarding this girl who was like valuable because her blood was poisonous. And it was just like Wolverine was there and the imagery is gorgeous. It's like a story. It's not really a comic, but there's so many pictures that it's kind of a comic. But it's stunning. And there's so, like, Amano also did the color work. So it's like in blues and reds and blood and fabrics and blacks and eyes. And it's just amazing. It's really, it's art with a capital A. I know I've said that before, but this book, if you can find it, Elektra Wolverine Redeemer, again, you'll just like be, really? Marvel? The other one they did of Elektra, as I was mentioning in 2002, Greg Rucka was writing the story arc. It started around 1718. But the thing that was cool about this series is if you get the Elektra series, it was illustrated by Carlos Miglia, who is another one of these European cartoonists who was doing Cyber 9, and he had this really chunky style. He'd been doing stuff for Dark Horse, some of their Star Wars comics and stuff. He did a Superman Tarzan. Like, he was just really all over the map and just a fantastic illustrator who is unfortunately no longer with us, but his Elektra was so much fun to read and super cartoony, goofy, and again, not really what you would expect. Like, for me, Marvel, I love them, but they are just a bunch of hacks for the most part. Like, I know many people will disagree with me, but one of the reasons why I couldn't get into Ultimate Spider-Man is because I just found Mark Bagley's artistry to be so lame and weak and typical. And that's just my opinion. I'm not saying I'm right. But at the same time, there was all this other stuff that was coming out with just was so, so wicked awesome. So that's why we're talking about Marvel in 2000 from 2005. Now we're going to play another track. You're listening to CJLO 1690 AM. We are now going to play Flame On singing. No, Flame On is the song. Captain America is the group. And of course, they've had to change their name pretty goddamn immediately because Marvel was all over them like a dirty shirt, and that was happening in the 70s. I think they're called Eugenius now. But this track, of course, is what Human Torch used to always say when he was ready to go as a fiery inferno. He'd be flame on! And then he'd go. Anyways, and we've got more stuff. I'm going to talk about Captain America up next. CJLO 1690 AM. We'll be right back. And it's the CJLO 1690 AM. This is the Onomatopoeia Show, where we talk about all graphic arts all the time. And I need to play an ad because the last one just didn't play, so we're going to play it right now. Bear with me.
Featuring the best in underground dance music from past and present, make sure to tune in to Salvation from Sin with DJ Michael Terzian, a.k.a. Sinister, taking you on a three-hour musical journey, showcasing the soulful side of the house music spectrum. That's Salvation from Sin, Friday nights from midnight to 3 a.m. right here on CJLO, 1690 a.m. in Montreal.
All right, there we go. Now, we're talking about the Marvel Alternative. You're listening to CJLO. This is the Onomatopoeia Show. We're running out of time. There's so much I want to tell you about because there's so much awesome stuff that came out, so I guess we'll extend it to next week. But I was talking about Elektra and all the cool things that came out during the 2000s about her. And one of the last ones I wanted to quickly mention was there was this great one written by Scott Morris and fully painted by Scott Morris. Now, if you're bored, just Google him, Scott Morse, M-O-R-S-E, and he has the most distinctive, gorgeous style. It's like old Disney paintings, like Mary Blair. It's gorgeous. Anyway, so he did this Elektra, Glimpse and Echo, in 2002, and it was sort of like Elektra in the jazz scene. It's you really have to read it to believe it, but it's so, so nice to look at, and it's, you know, it's not just pooed out work that Marvel is so notorious for doing. Do you understand what I'm saying? It's work that people put so much love and attention and guts and heart and soul into it. And it's not just something that was churned out. So it makes it so much more special than the average thing that Marvel does. The other, I wanted to talk about the X-Men. I wanted to talk about Runaways, but we're running out of time. So I'm only going to talk about Captain America, and then we're going to go to another track. Now, one of the things about Captain America that I've, and Fantastic Four. That's what we'll talk about. Captain America and Fantastic Four. I don't really like Captain America. I think he's pretty boring, to be honest with you. This is, again, just my opinion. You don't have to believe in me. You don't have to, what's the word? Listen. You don't have to listen. So, anyways, my point is, though, is at this in this time period, there were two great Captain America comics that came out, and that was Dead Man Running, which came out in 2001, and What Price Glory, which came out in 2002. Now, Dead Man Running was written by Darko McCann, who did some Grendels, and his Captain America was fascinating. It was illustrated by Daniel Zizelj, who has this really sketchy, almost messy style, really chunky, he did a series with Richard Corbin doing the covers. Corbin and him are kind of similar in their thickness. But the thing is, the story, Dead Man Running, was great because it starts out with these American military guys, and they're like somewhere, I don't know, in Venezuela or Colombia or something, and they've got these kids, and you think they're rescuing these kids, and Captain America parachutes down, and he's there to help them get out of the hot zone. But then, as they're in the hot zone, this helicopter shows up, and it's like, let go of the kids, and then the kids are like, Papa! And then you find out at the end of issue one that these military guys are kidnapping a drug lord's children so that they can get a piece of the cocaine pie that was going on down there. And so the end of the final page of issue one, it's a 4-issue series, or is it three? It's a 3-issue series. But the final page of issue one is one of the soldiers administering a drug to Captain America so he stays out of the way and is going to quote-unquote die. But you know they never die. So anyways. But the thing is it was like, bam, exciting from the start. And I find, you know, sometimes Captain America is a little dull. And so I think that Darko McCann and Daniel Zizelj did a fantastic job. The other one I wanted to mention before we go is the Captain America What Price Is Glory. This came out in 2002, and it's illustrated by Steve Rude. And it's written by Bruce Jones, who we mentioned earlier, who's an excellent writer. This story was really unlike anything. You know, like, okay, well, one of the reasons people really like Marvel is there's a whole bunch of pathos and angst going on. The thing about a lot of the DC characters is they're really hard to relate to, except for Batman, because they're so two-dimensional. You know what I mean? Whereas, you know, you got, like, Peter Parker, right? And he's struggling with his job, and he barely can make ends meet, and he's going to school, and he can never catch a break with a hot girl, and da-da-da-da, right? So it's really easy for readers to identify with Marvel. And this Captain America, What Price Glory, is all about what happens when you come back from war, and you're damaged, and you're not the same as you used to be, and the people around you are having trouble adjusting. And it's one of Captain America's buddies, and it's illustrated by Steve Rude, and at times it looks like he's channeling Jack Kirby, but the truth of the matter is he's really channeling Jim Steranko. And like the panel structure is just gorgeous. It becomes this kidnapping tale halfway through, and Captain America has to go find this young girl. And it's just like, it reminds me of so many cool things, and especially the awesome mod 60s style of Jim Steranko. I can't praise it enough. What price glory, Captain America. Steve Rude is, yeah, well, he did Nexus if you're bored and you're looking for something new and exciting. And Steve Rude is, we're going to talk about Steve Rude when we talk about X-Men next week, because he did this great Children of the Atom series. But before we go, another group of characters that Marvel does that I've never really been fascinated by is the Fantastic Four. I also find them very boring. And I do have a few of their books. There's Fantastic Four 1, 2, 3, 4, but I'm going to talk about that next week because Grant Morrison wrote it. But illustrated by Jay Lee. It's great, great, great. But I'm going to talk quickly about Marvel Knights for Wolf at the Door. It's the first. You can get the collection of it. It's illustrated by Steve McNiven and written by, I can't say his name, Roberto Aguirre. But the thing that was great about this Fantastic Four book is, because the thing is, these characters are so steeped in their like gimmicks, you know, their tropes, you know, like Sue Storm, invisible woman, totally invisible to her husband, Mr. Fantastic can stretch everywhere and be anywhere at the same time, but he's not anywhere because he's too busy in his lab ignoring everyone doing scientific things, the Thing, nobody knows who he really is or sees who he really is because he's encased in rock, but there he is, big man, everyone sees him, you know what I mean, like it's really, it's Stanley. But my point is that Marvel Knights number one, and Marvel Knights 4 of Fantastic Four, the first book, is awesome because it's all about how they lose all their money and they're kicked out of the tower. They have to go find real jobs, and it's a real sort of crashing back to reality sort of thing. And it's Steve McNiven does an excellent job illustrating. It looks really real. It's got his own distinct, definite style, and it's a lot of fun. There's even a story at the end about aliens invading, and sort of kind of a Blair Witch spoof, and it's a lot of fun, which is one of the things about Marvel that people sometimes forget, is that one of the greatest things about them is sometimes they can be a lot of fun. I mean, look at Dupe, okay? Dupe, who showed up in Ecstatics. We're going to talk about him next week, too. But my point is, we're done. And next week, we're going to talk about the later things that were happening at Marvel that were really cool. And that should lead us into some nice interviews. I don't want to give too much away, but I am in talks to do a Patton Oswalt interview. So maybe we'll see. We'll see. Anyways, the last thing I want to play for you before we go is this great new track by Nas off his new album. It's called Daughters. You know why I'm playing it? It's Father's Day today, and we should all give love to our dads because they're awesome. Our moms are awesome too, but we already gave love to them on Mother's Day, and technically you should give love to your parents every day. You know how it is. And this is how we roll at the Onomatopoeia Show. Anyways, I love Nas, and I'm excited to see this new album. The video is pretty cool because it's all from the perspective of his daughter. Like, his daughter is actually looking at him, talking to him, driving her to school, and she's like smoking and getting tattoos and stuff. And I don't know, it's kind of interesting, especially when you know the history of Nas. I mean, here him and his wife, former wife Khalees, are like all singing songs about their baby, but they're not together anymore. And anyways, blah blah blah. CJLO 1690 AM, Nas, Daughters. Stay tuned for Grade A Explosives up next. I think he'll be here. I hope he'll be here. We'll see. We'll see. Nas.
Check it out. I call it. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, yeah. For my brothers with daughters, I call this. For my brothers with daughters, I call this. For my brothers with daughters, I call this. For my brothers with daughters, I saw my daughter send a letter to some boy her age who locked up. First I regretted it, then caught my rage. Like, how could I not protect her from this awful fate? Never try to hide who I was, she was taught and raised like a princess. But while I'm on stage, I can't leave her defenseless. Plus she see me switching women, pops was on some pimps. She heard stories of her daddy thugging. So if her husband is a gangster, can't be mad, I love her. Never, for her I want better. Homie in jail, dead dad. Wait till he come home, you can see where his head's at. God game, they be trying to live. He seen your mama crib, plus I'm sure he know who your father is. Although you real, plus an honest kid. Don't think I'm slow, I know you probably had that chronic lid. You 17, I got a problem with it. She look at me like I'm not the cleanest father figure, but she rockin' with it. For my brothers with daughters, I call this. For my brothers.
brothers with daughters. I call this not saying that our sons are less important. For my brothers with daughters, I call this. For my brothers with daughters, I call this. Not saying that our sons are less important. This morning I got a call, nearly split my wig. The social network said, Nas, go and get your kids. She's on Twitter, I know she ain't gonna post no pic of herself underdress, no inappropriate, right? Her mother cried when she asked, said she don't know what got inside this child's mind. She planted a box of condoms on her dresser, then she Instagrammed it. At this point I realize I ain't the strictest parent. I'm too loose, I'm too cool with her. Should've drove more time to school with her. I thought I dropped enough jewels on her. Took her from private school so she can get a balance to public school. They too nurture teen talents. They grow fast. One day she's your little princess. Next day she's talking boy business. What is this? They say the coolest players and foulest heartbreakers in the world. God gets us back. He makes us have precious little girls. For my brothers with daughters, I call this. For my brothers with daughters, I call this. Not saying that our sons are less important. For my brothers with daughters, I call this. For my brothers with daughters, I call this. Not saying that our sons are less important. And I ain't trying to mess your thing up, but I just want to see you dream up. I finally understand it ain't easy to raise a girl as a single man. Nah, the way mothers feel for their sons, how fathers feel for their daughters. When he date, he straight, chip off his own papa. When she date, we wait behind the door with a short off, 'cause we think no one is good enough for our daughters. Love.